Hey, everybody, it's Scott here. Welcome back to Verbal Shenanigans. We got a great one for you today. Happy Memorial Day, everybody. It's a great day to be alive. We are also happy to have a couple really neat sponsors on the podcast. So let's talk about them real quick. One of them happens to be Manskirt Brewing, a craft brewery located in Hackettstown, New Jersey. They're just an awesome brewery to go have a pint, try 8 of their seasonally inspired ales. Always something new rotating through those taps. It's a great setting to go, you know, have a pint, play a card game, chill out. Go see Joe Fisher in his Manskirt. He is the owner and the proprietor of Manskirt. They're always doing really fun events and beer festivals. So go check out Manskirt Brewing. Give them some love on Facebook and the old Instagram machine there. Wolf Nation, W-U-L-F, wake up, live free. Wolf Nation is a clothing company, the next hottest clothing company around, if you ask me. But designer brands for men, women, children. Go check out their website at wolfnation.rocks. A lot of new stuff coming out. They got female leggings and boy shorts and camouflage fatigues and Greek lettering shirts that just came out this week. They got snapback hats and sweatshirts. You have to go check it out. There's something for everyone. There's all different styles, all different cuts and colors and whatnot and design. So go check out our friends at Wolf Nation, W-U-L-F Nation. Wake up, live free. It's only a dream if you are not pursuing it. Trivia Revolution is a trivia company based out of New Jersey in beer bars and breweries fueled by craft beer. Each week, there's a bonus item. You can come play, get extra points. It's free to play, win prizes to breweries and craft beer bars all over New Jersey. It's just a fun night out. Follow them on Instagram and Facebook to check out their bonus items. That is Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. Now, we got two awesome guests today. First, ultra runner. She's been on the show once before. Really interesting. She has a book coming out about her drug addictions and her life and how she built herself up to running 100, 200-mile races. That is Katra Corbett. And we have a recording artist by the name of Carrie Kimmel. So we got Katra Corbett, Carrie Kimmel, two separate people, both with really cool consonant names, double consonant names. But Carrie Kimmel, the recording artist, her music's been in over 650 different shows from The Walking Dead. And then she is also sang backup for guys like Bruce Springsteen and the Backstreet Boys and Dave Grohl. Just a really cool interview. She's got a new album coming out today, actually, as this podcast is going up. So with that, guys, enjoy the podcast. Yeah.
Hey, this is Carrie Kimmel, and you're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Sweet sounds of the intro song. Yay! Oh, yes, yes, yes. Hey, everybody, it's Scott here. Welcome to Verbal Shenanigans, your weekly podcast that you love. You probably don't love it, but we love doing it, so I hope that at least comes through. Boy, was this a train wreck for me to get on the air. Lots of technical difficulties. Look at that. I just tried to say technical difficulties, and I couldn't even get it out. But let me get my partner on the line here. My partner in life, my partner in the podcast, Mike Berlow.
I am here.
Oh, hi, Mike. I started the podcast.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
How'd it go?
You know, frustrating. I just tried, like, I lost you. My computer's dying. My headphones weren't working. I couldn't hear myself. Very frustrating leading up to this podcast. I was Well, anyway, Mike, welcome to the show. Welcome to Mike. Guys,
that's a great way to welcome me in.
Yeah, yeah.
But go on.
One thing I heard, Mike, that for podcasts, that what we're supposed to do, I heard this on, I read this on a thing, we're supposed to always introduce ourselves and the show. So welcome to the show, Mike. Mike, this is Mike Berlew. He is the co-host of the Verbal Shenanigans podcast.
Well, thank you for that introduction, Scott Brennan. I really appreciate that. Yeah. It's it warms the heart.
Well, I mean, I guess it makes sense if you're tuning in for the first time and you're like, who's the guy talking? So if you're hearing my voice, I'm Scott. And if you're hearing that voice, it's Mike.
Hmm. Yeah, yeah. After 200-something episodes, somebody finally started listening to this one.
Yeah, well, you know, never know. You never know. But
never know.
So right before we went on, sometimes we record the interviews that we do on the show before we get together. So I was home early today, like earlier than usual and ready earlier than normal. And my podcast stuff hasn't moved, so... you would assume no problems, right? So I'm sitting out on the porch, not the porch, the front steps with my dog. And we're just sitting there. It's beautiful out today. And another dog comes walking by. And lately he's been fine. Like he doesn't usually even care about our dog. But another dog comes walking by and he goes, oh, and I didn't have the leash on. So he's just sitting next to me. And I went to stop him. Like, he went to go running towards the dog, and I went to stop him and, like, put my arm out to the right to kind of, you know, like, the Costanza move, like, when they're in the...
Stop short,
yeah, to stop him, and he, like, tries to leap over my arm, and I must have clipped his front legs, and he landed at the bottom of the steps, like, head first. Yeah, like hit his head, and then his leg, and then all of a sudden he's like, oh! And his leg is like his leg is like curled up, not touching the ground, and I'm like panicking. And the guy with the other dog is like, oh my god, I'm sorry. Like, I'm like, you didn't do anything. You didn't, like, no one did anything. Like, and I'm just like worried about the dog. And this was about 10 minutes before we had to record. And I'm worried about his leg. You know, his leg first, because his head's made of concrete. You know, like. But his leg, he's been limping a little bit for like the last 2 weeks, like on and off, which he's done this before. So I don't go right to panic mode, you know, with the dog. They always say don't go to panic mode like right away with the dog, because if you go, sometimes they just like limp. Like, sometimes they chew their paw. Sometimes they're sore. You know, he's getting a little up there in age. Maybe he has a little arthritis going. And I have a vet appointment actually coming up on Wednesday. So I wasn't like, you know, I'm not completely putting it off. And so his foot is like curled all the way up near his body, and I'm thinking, like, because I know, like, people I know have had dogs like like tear their ACLs and stuff like that, and it's like, you know, thousands of dollars to repair, and immediately like, oh god, he blew his ACL out or something like that, and because his foot wouldn't even go down. And this happened once before when he was a puppy. He like got his foot caught in like the little puppy door and like twisted it, and his foot was all weird for like 2 days, and I was in full panic mode. But he also bashed his face. He had like a cut above his eye and a cut on his chin, and he's bleeding. It was stressful, man. So I like bring him inside and try to clean him up a little bit with like a wet rag, and He seems okay, and he started walking a little bit, you know, putting the foot down a little bit more at a time, a little bit more at a time, and he seems back to the limp he was doing before, which could be even on the other leg, so we don't even know. But god, man, when an animal is in pain, like your animal, it is horrific, because you can't even ask them what's up, like, what's the matter, what are you hurt, you know, like, you have to. And they're pretty resilient, but god damn, I was pretty messed up right before we started this podcast.
So how's he treating you right now? Has he totally forgotten about it, or is it one of those, daddy, well, how could you, and like sticking away from you?
Well, he already blasted through the door when we were doing one of these interviews to come like say hi, so that's normal Obi behavior. So He seems all right. So hopefully it's one of two things. I think his limp is either a little arthritis or he had that tick-borne transmitted disease a couple years ago. I wonder if that's flaring up a little bit in the joints and whatnot. So that was the start of this podcast, guys. So if I seem a little flustered, if I'm talking a little fast, that's why.
Yeah.
Speaking of Lyme disease.
For our new audience members here, Scott likes to beat up his dog a lot. So you get used to this on the podcast. Yeah. You hear these stories. Oh, he fell. Oh, he accidentally Oh, he walked down the traffic for no good reason.
I accidentally hit him with something.
Scott's a little bit right here and all where he tries to kill his dog. It's so beautiful. Go on, Scott.
Yeah, it's cute. It's cute. No. But speaking of Lyme disease, if you checked out last week's episode, a really good one, Jim Miller, UFC fighter, has close to 30 fights in the UFC, a professional. He went into it. What I liked about that interview was his second time coming on the show, and he I wanted to start the interview a little different than like, hey, how'd you get into fighting or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing I asked him was about Lyme disease, and he went pretty deep into it because he is a sufferer of Lyme disease, and I thought that was like one of the most fascinating part of the interview last week. And I saw he did something like today or yesterday on one of the news networks about his Lyme disease.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of always wonder. I mean, it's really cool getting some of our guests that I know, they probably know going in when a podcast says, hey, we want to talk to you, we're going to bring up the thing that everybody talks to them about. I almost kind of wonder how many of them are just like, this one again. Okay, this is where it started.
Yeah, yeah. It's even sometimes I feel guilty of it, like when we do an interview, like, okay, how did you get your stuff? But you also, like, you know, even if you know, you got to think about the audience. You know, you got to think about, like, okay, the audience, if they're hearing this, wants to know who you're interviewing, you know?
Yeah.
Like, today we have Catcher coming back on, so I'm spoiling that, guys. But we have Catcher Corbett, who is an ultra runner, coming back on. And, you know, I'm going to, you know, introduce some of her, how'd she get into the running 200 miles at a clip.
Yeah, I mean, it's just something, as we go along, we have regular guests. I mean, it's a nice kind of thing. I mean, we look back at some of our guests we've had two or three times. It's kind of nice to just sit back and go, all right, we got the gist of this. Let's talk about some real stuff and get the real person into it.
Yeah, I mean, this month especially, we have like a cavalcade of some of our favorite guests coming back in the last this week, and then some of the ones coming up in the next few weeks. So, like last week, we had Jim Miller. Sure. Today, we have Catra. And we got a couple other guys coming back on the show. So, I always love getting people back on the show, especially Sharon Alexander.
Yeah, that's why I'm sorry, Scott. I got to spoil it. We're going to call Lenny Dykstra right now and say we're his attorney.
You beat me too.
We got our fingers crossed.
You beat me too. That's kind of what I was leading to here. I guess we won't be getting our pal Lenny Dykstra on the phone unless he's going to do like a ton of interviews before he's possibly off to prison.
Yeah. I can't deny, as we talked to him before, as fun as it was, I mean, one of the funniest things, you go back to the interview, we asked everybody, Scott and I talked to, he was probably on the phone for a good hour. I think Scott and me totaled 5 minutes of questions.
And he didn't want to get off.
He filled in the rest, a lot of it, without not us even asking about it.
And he didn't want to get off the show.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
We ended the interview.
Yeah. I still maintain he stayed on the phone for 3 hours after that podcast.
let's be frank, like, because it doesn't matter if he never comes on the show again. The guy was definitely scoring drugs on the podcast. If you go back and listen to episode 160 and you listen to the beginning of the episode, you hear him, we're like asking him where he is, and he says he's on the corner of heaven and hell. And you hear a bunch of people yelling, and he's out on the streets, and he sounds messed up, and he's rambling. And
there was also one part where he lowered his volume, and he kind of said, "Oh, there's some cops by. There's some cops by."
Yeah. Yeah. So we knew he was messed up the whole time. It doesn't take a genius to figure that out. But even funnier, like he, before the interview, I had reached out to him many, many times, and he never really did. And I randomly like tweeted him, and he said he would do the interview that night. And I called him prior to set things up, and he was so much worse than you hear him in that interview. He could barely speak. He was telling me he was flying in a private jet and all this other stuff, and it was pretty scary. And then he actually did follow through and call us. And I remember we were doing an interview with Chips Cooney that night, and he was calling him, and I actually ignored him for a minute and called him back, and he sure enough answered the phone and gave us one hell of an interview. Honestly, if this show ended today. Which we're going to announce that in a minute. we're not going anywhere. I know some of you are like, yes, finally. It turned out to be one hell of an interview. And if you listen to it today, it's kind of our like our one that like if we're talking to someone like, oh, you have a point, well, like what episode should I listen to? It's kind of the one I point to like, well, if you don't want to listen to us, you have to listen to this at least.
Yeah. It's one of those, it's kind of like if you spot an alien and you take a picture of it, it's the go-to where everybody's like, what the hell?
It was bizarre, to say the least. Some of the things that came out of that guy's mouth, or have probably been in that guy's mouth, are appalling, is a good word.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those, if somebody came up to you, did you hear who put a gun to an Uber driver's head and the cops caught him with ecstasy, marijuana, and what was the other? Cocaine. Like, your first thought might be just, oh, Lenny Dykstra.
Oh.
Not even looking at the news. You know.
Your first thought might be, well, it has to be one of the 86 Mets. Then you would narrow it down from there.
Yeah. Wally Backman. Wow.
I mean, you have to say the 86 Mets have to be the most dysfunctional group of athletes ever assembled on one team. You have those cowboy teams in there.
Yeah, that's about the only one I could say that could compete with them. But then again, I mean, of them, Michael Irvin got arrested, right?
Yeah.
I think
Nate Newton.
The group buying. Yeah.
Nate Newton had like 300 pounds of marijuana or something in the trunk and guns.
Yeah, he didn't play around that guy.
Yeah. But I mean, let's go through just a couple of the 86 Mets. Hold on one second. Okay, so you got Lenny Dykstra. You got Doc Gooden, disaster.
Yeah.
Daryl Strawberry,
yep.
Disaster.
Yep.
Daryl seems at least he's straightened up. I don't think Doc has straightened up. Keith Hernandez, yeah. Which is not exactly the lovable guy he is today. You had Kevin McReynolds, a guy who would come to games drunk. Apparently one time they called the pinch hit for him, like he'd call him the pinch hit, and he had left the stadium already. You got Wally Backman, who did not, you know, he had a couple things against him recently. A very dysfunctional group. I mean, I read that book, The Bad Guys One, and it was just an eye opener. I mean, I don't think there's a team. There might have been other teams that were that bad, but none that won the championship.
No, and it's one of those You look at that team, you said they should have won more, and then you hear stories, and you almost say they should have won less.
Yeah, you're almost like, okay, we'll settle with the one. We'll take the one.
But, well, apparently, the like four Mets were arrested at a Cooter's bar in Houston in '86, too.
Yep.
I don't know who involved with that.
I think it was the whole crew. Like, it was Doc and Daryl and a couple other guys. And then there's Gary Carter, who was like this, and Mookie Wilson, who were like these, like, super, like, religious guys who, like, tried to do everything right. It must have been, I wish I could have been, like, a reporter during that era, just to, like, see the dynamic in the locker room.
But, I mean, I don't know what else to say. I mean, it's a ton of talent. Think about it rationally. If that 86 team was, say, Kansas City, where there's no nightlife whatsoever, maybe they could have been a dynasty.
Yeah.
You know, the some temptation. Place where it's like, if you put them away from the easy access, they'll just kind of be choir boys just because there's nothing to do 81 days out of the year.
And then I think about it, like, in terms of today, you know, if a team like that could not exist today, there's too much under the microscope. People would know immediately. Like, think about, like, a guy like Matt Harvey. Here's a guy who, you know, is more of an attitude kind of thing. That guy's so under the microscope, he never had a chance to really straighten it out. And he made some bad decisions and some bad media things. But imagine 10 guys like him. It would never happen. Never. Never.
No.
You know, like...
The manager would just up and quit. He would... I mean, there's no way anybody would stick by them. And again, in the pantheon of New York City, it would have been impossible. I mean, you almost give credit to Derek Jeter how the hell he kept a private life being in New York for 21 years.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, he didn't break any laws, but, I mean, for what I hear, he wasn't any choir boy when it came to womanizing, from what I understand. Sure.
I heard he was, like, famous for, like, taking cell phones away and, you know, which makes sense, but...
Yeah.
So, Lenny...
That's a man right there. Well, you can just go, give me your cell phone, you ain't gonna talk to anybody about this, and they go, yes, sir.
Yeah. I was thinking today, I wanted to, like, I didn't have time, but I wanted to go through all our guests and figure out how many of our guests have been in prison before.
Well, I mean, Christian, Patra was one.
Yeah, Catro, who's coming up.
Yeah.
We have Christian Picciolini.
Yeah. Christian Picciolini.
We have Lilo Brancato from Bronx Tale.
Mm-hmm.
Lenny Dykstra's coming, let's face it.
Well, he was already there before.
Yeah, that's true. That's where he got his teeth knocked out. The rest would take some time. And it'd be funny, like, to figure out who's been in prison that we would never suspect.
Hmm. We'll just throw out...
Dan Gutman, the children's author.
Had to get my life right. Do children books after what I did.
I was selling children's books up in that... I didn't have any cigarettes. I sold children's books on the block. Guys read them up and down. I was rich. But, yeah, so that would be a fun question to figure out how many people have been in prison publicly from this show. So, anyway.
Yeah, and I got the sheet in front of me. I'm trying to scroll down the list and think of anybody right off the bat. Nobody's really truly coming to mind as I'm going. But,
Mark Rigadonna. Yep, totally Mark Rigadonna. No, I made that up. But,
yeah.
Anyway,
Barbara Jo Wehmeyer. What the hell?
Anyway, guys, I think it's time to get to our first guest. Our first guest has been on the show quite a while ago. It's been a while, and she is she's not only a colorful personality, she is a colorful person.
Oh,
but what I mean by that
is what you did there.
Yeah. Go Google a picture of Katja Corbett. And she's an ultra runner. She runs massive races, 100 milers, 200 milers, 240 milers. She's been on the show before. She has a book coming out. She talks about her drug addiction. I'm sure she talks about her tattoos, her veganism. She's just a very interesting person. I'm glad we got to talk to her again. So here is our interview with Katja Corbett. Katja, it's been, I don't know, it was like about I'd say we interviewed you at least a year and a half ago. It might have been even like 2 years ago.
Yeah, something like that.
So I saw, the reason I wanted to get you back on, I saw recently that you you just released a book.
I did.
Now, let me ask you something. Before we even get into the book, you're a woman who runs, I don't even know how many miles per week, all the time, every day. Where do you find time to write a book?
Well, I hired a writer to work with because, of course, when I was approached, had I ever written a book or would I like to write a book from a literary agent, I said, I want to. Everybody's bugging me to, but I don't have time to sit down. I'm always running, like you said. So I hired a writer to work with. And so we came up what the content was going to be about. And then I recorded my stories. And so we went back and forth with me recording stories. And then he would write it out. We recorrected. We talked together and changed things that he heard wrong, because a lot of that happened because I'm out running and I'm like telling a story. So, and yeah, it was quite the process. So I learned a lot doing this, and it ended up just, it worked out great. He had written, the writer that I hired, Dan, he wrote a story about me. So I really liked his writing style, and it was a new challenge for him because he's never written a book and he was ready to quit like after the first month because they were picking everything apart because he was writing it like an interview. And they're like, no, you can't tell her story like you're interviewing her. You guys got to work this out and figure out how you're going to do it to make it look right. So, and I liked his style. And I mean, I could have hired a writer from them. They would have provided a writer for me. And it ended up working out. It came together, and it's selling like crazy.
That's awesome.
I was really hoping the story was that she had a piece of paper and a pen and just told the guy running in front of her, slow down, I got an idea. Come on,
yeah,
I got my idea.
That would be really hard. No.
Well,
I recorded everything.
Yeah, before we even get, like, you know, into the book a little bit, and like obviously it's your story, we gotta tell new listeners a little bit about you. So first off, you are an ultra runner. About how many miles do you run per week on average?
80 to 120, but last week I did 210.
That's it?
Yeah, some weeks I do 200. I mean, I'm doing a lot of 200-mile races, so. But, yeah. So it can be up to 200 miles. And actually, in end of June, July, I'll be doing under 6 days, I'll do 310 miles.
Hold on, Ketra, you're breaking up a little bit here.
Uh-huh.
Let me just hang up and reconnect with you. I think we got like a funky connection going on. So I'll call you right back. Mike, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. Ketra, you're good?
I'm good. I'm right here.
Ooh, maybe you're good. Where are we calling you from? What state are you in at the moment?
I'm in California.
Oh, well. Poor you.
I know. Actually, the weather sucks right now. It's like overcast and it's been cold. I mean, I'm actually like wearing a jacket. I'm getting ready to go running after the interview at night. And it's like, oh my God, what happened to our weather? This is not California normal weather.
Yeah.
Like for the Bay Area, it's like sucky right now.
So now for
need heat.
Yeah, for people listening, like you just said, you ran 200 miles. You've done 100 mile races, 200 mile races. Where did you start? Where was your origins in running? I know that you didn't grow up a runner.
I hated running.
So how did it find you?
So running found me after I got clean and sober. I had been clean and sober for 10 years. I mean, 2 years, sorry, not 10 years. And I was working out in a gym, and I was like walking like 3 miles every day with my dog. And one day, just out of the blue, I decided, I'm going to run tomorrow. I'm going to run this 3 miles and I'm going to do it. So I did. And then I saw a flyer in Barnes and Noble's for a upcoming 10K and signed up for that. So within a couple of weeks of running, I did my first 10K and finished that. And there was a flyer for the San Francisco Marathon, which was going to be happening in 3 months. So I decided I would sign up for that, not knowing how far it was. I knew it was like 20 miles or something. And I asked my friend, I'm like, how far is the marathon? He's like 26.2. And I said, okay, I'm going to run that in 3 months. And so started from there. I bought a book on how to train for your first marathon and had to skip ahead to the chapter that talked about like what your long runs should be doing. And I needed to do a 9-mile long run on a Sunday. So It was before GPS and all our fancy schmancy gadgets. The good old odometer in the car, you just reset it and you drove out. So I drove out 4.5 miles and I turned around and I figured, okay, this is where I'm going to turn around tomorrow. And so it started from there.
Well, along with your marathon running, it seems like around that same time you turned to veganism. Why did you go to that extreme? It seems like your whole life. I mean, we know your story, but what made you also want to go into that route of life?
So I was a vegetarian for a long time. And so right when I got clean and sober and I was arrested, the very next day I became vegan. So I got rid of the dairy and
completely cut the rest of it out. The cow's fault that you got arrested.
Yeah, exactly. No, I just figured I'm kind of like that. I'm all in, like, really getting involved into something, as you can see with my running. So I decided, since I was talking about becoming a vegan at the time with one of my friends, I decided, let's become vegan now after I got out of jail. And so me and her decided. But it goes back to when I was a small girl. We were raising cattle that my sisters were in a program called FFA, Future Farmers of America, and they had that in high school. And they raised cattle and would sell it at the fair and lambs and whatever. And my sister had a horse. And so I was in the younger people's version of that, which was called 4-H. And so my father at some point ended up buying 9 head of cattle to just raise to make money off of them and sell them, you know, after like a year and a half, sell them and make money off of them. So, or we had them for a couple of years, I want to say. So we raised them, and there was one that I actually named Charlie. And my parents used to get upset with me. Don't name these animals. These are not pets. So this is before I actually had my lamb that I was going to sell in 4-H. But I came home one day. So we had got rid of all the head of cattle, and there was one left on the ranch because we rented space on a ranch. Like, we just rented to be able to keep our animals there and our horse and whatever. And I came home and my brother opened up the freezer in the garage one day and he said, Charlie's in the freezer. At 9 years old, I decided I'm not eating anything that came out of that freezer because it was going to be Charlie. So it kind of started from there where I stopped eating beef as a young girl. Like, you know, my mom would make, you know, pasta with meatballs, but I'd be like, take the meatball out. And, you know, there's still pieces of meat floating around in there, but it didn't. I wasn't that into it. I didn't think about it. But as long as there was no hamburger or anything coming out of that freezer, I wasn't going to eat any of that was coming out of there. So I basically started more just eating chicken and fish when I was younger. Like, if we went to a fast food, I always got fish sandwiches kind of thing. So it started from there. So I started, you know, at 9 years old, became, you know, stopped eating hamburger. And then the following year, I had raised my lamb, Bosco, and didn't even think about somebody was going to eat him once they bought him. And I was at the fair, and one of the older teenage boys came up to me, and he goes, you know they're going to eat your lamb? And I'm like, no, they're not. They're going to have it for a pet.
Not,
you know,
my lamb.
Yeah, so I actually ran away from the dorm, and my dad and the police and everybody had to come looking for me, and I was in the pen at the fair with my lamb crying because, you know, I knew he was going to get eaten. And so my dad had the man come talk to me, and I don't know the true story, but I'm sure that he was going to eat him, but he pretended that he was going to use him for a stud. So, you know, I don't know the real story, but my dad came up to me and told the man to go tell me that, because I was like freaking out. He's all, you can come visit him. And, you know, but that never happened. So, so after that, I stopped eating lamb.
Now, with your running extreme amounts of miles, do you find what are you doing for? What is your diet like for when you're preparing for like these longer races? Like, all, you know, I listen to all these interviews like with these ultra runners that are on like Rogan's podcast and whatnot. It seems like, you know, they're getting, these races are getting bigger to 100 miles, to 200. People are talking about 500 mile. Well, what kind of diet are you on when you're, if you're not able to get like animal protein? What are you? What's your diet base?
What do I eat? I eat plants and fruits and vegetables and, you know, nuts and things like that. But I don't count anything. I'm not like, oh, I need to do this much protein. Because I was fruitarian for 3 years, where I just ate fruit for 3 years. And that I mean, I just got bored with it. So I stopped doing that and started doing lightly cooked vegetables. But I felt fantastic on it. There was like nothing. I mean, I did my fastest 100-mile time, 21:20, and I never, I mean, there, I wasn't lacking anything. I even, when I got my yearly physicals when I was doing that, my B12 wasn't even low. So with that said, it's like you don't waste away to nothing. If you're eating enough calories, you're going to get enough nutrients in your body.
Right.
So, I mean, I was eating avocados as my high fat source and stuff like that. So I eat pretty much the same way. Like people are like, what do you eat the day before a race? I'm like, just a salad like I normally eat. I mean, I don't change anything. But in the, with talking about the 200-mile races, when you're out there, you're eating, you know, you go from aid station to aid station and you're eating and they prepare you meals. Like I'll eat a vegan patty, you know, like a vegan burger out there and I'll just put mustard on it. But they, you go into an aid station and you got to refuel because you may go for 5 hours without an aid station. So that type of running, you're actually eating quite a bit. Like when I just did 200 miles, it was a solo thing last week. I only ended up losing 3 pounds, like, you know, and I just, you know, gained it back pretty quickly because I ate a lot more high calorie almond butters and stuff.
Hmm. I mean, you've gone through so much and it's a heck of a story with all your running. Just out of curiosity, is there a contra outside of running? Are people able to say, hey, we're going for a beer? No, I'm going 200 miles tomorrow. Or
I don't drink, so I'm not going for a beer. But no, I hang out with my friends at my house. Like people come over and I invite other, I mean, obviously I hang out with mostly runners because that's what we're attracted to and people come and hang out. But no, I like doing other stuff. I mean, I used to be really big into rock climbing and I was going to start training again this year and do ALCAP again. But my friend that I was going to do it with just broke both his legs. So I don't think he'll be climbing ALCAP for a while. And he has the most records on ALCAP. So, but we had talked about it. He's like, you got to get back into it and you got to do the nose with me because he's climbed the nose like 120 times. So, but yeah, he just took a really bad fall, but he's recovering and he will recover well and be back out there again. But yeah, I love rock climbing. I mean, I'm moving to Bishop, so bouldering, it'll be really great to get back into something like that. So, but I love doing other stuff. I want to get a mountain bike. I don't have one, but I figure I'm moving to Bishop. I can get a mountain bike. So I'm moving to the mountains to be closer to, you know, being out and doing stuff. And I like fast packing and hiking, you know, long distance. But I like doing anything outdoors. I go to the gym and I work out, but I prefer doing everything outdoors. But I do, you know, I go to movies and things like that. I do other stuff.
Now, the way you're talking, I'm guessing you're running around the movie theater during the whole thing.
Yeah. The worst person to go to the movies with.
Yeah. Come on, I'm trying to see Deadpool here. Get down.
No, as long as I run every day, I'm on a running streak, and I've been doing that for over 5 years still. So.
5 years, Jesus. Now, tell, like, we last time we talked to you, we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about your running partner.
Truman.
Who is a dachshund, who is a small dog, which probably, what is he, like 15 pounds, something like that?
No, 9.
9 pounds.
Oh, God, come on now. 15.
He was 15 pounds. He's chubby. No, he's only 9 pounds, 9.6 pounds.
Now, I saw today, even on Instagram, you posted something about, you know, when you got him and what happened. So tell us a quick story about how you got him and how this dog is able to run with you.
Yeah, so I had a Doxy Jack Russell Terrier mix, and he passed away. And Rocky ran with me, but nothing, you know, just a few miles up to 9 miles here and there. And as he got older, it was like 6 miles was enough for him. Like he would go on strike, and then you'd have to pick him up and carry him if he didn't want to go anymore. So I was working with my old roommate and we were doing Doxy Rescue and we were fostering. So the first foster came and this guy was retired. He was 65 and he was not like a little small dog. I mean, he liked my dog before Rocky passed away, but he was not a small dog guy. And I mean, at the time, and he ended up adopting the first dachshund that came into our house that we were supposed to prepare to get ready to adopt out. So we had several that came and then came Truman, and I was out of town and he called me. He goes, I'm going away. He goes, I know you're coming home tonight, but we got this rescue that showed up, and it's a little boy, and he goes, and he's afraid of everything. He's not going to be out. He'll be hiding under the furniture when you get home to feed him. So I came home and I looked behind the couch and I was like, oh my God, this dog is so afraid. It was like curled in a ball, scared, like shivering, just like tail between the legs, would not look at you. It was just, it was so sad. So eventually I got him out. I let him stay there and he kind of poked his head out, and then I carried him out. And so I decided to start working with him because I needed to get him prepared to find a forever home, you know, and I had to work with him on his scares and get him to where somebody could adopt him and he wasn't like scared of every noise around. So I worked with him by taking him outside and loud noises like the garbage truck would go by and just sit with him to make him overcome these fears, knowing that these things aren't going to hurt him because he came from a house of 22 other dachshunds. So if you can imagine having 22 little yappers, and he apparently was a low man on the totem pole and he probably hid from them. And he actually got adopted out temporarily to another family with a large dog that apparently would just lick him to death and licked all his fur off. And then he went back to the other house. Jeez. With the 22 dachshunds. Yeah. And then she had to let, you know, part of the herd go because she obviously either got told she had to, you know, get rid of all these dogs because she didn't have a permit for them. So he came to us. And so anyways, I worked with him, got him to where I could walk him on a leash, but I couldn't walk him really in the neighborhood. I had to carry him around. So eventually one day I decided after a couple weeks, oh, I'm going to drive him to the trailhead and we're going to go there and I'm going to take him off leash and I'm going to start running. It's less noisy there, less, you know, loud noises, like people are there. And he wasn't too afraid of people. He kind of liked people. So I took him off leash and started running. And I thought, he's either going to follow me or just stay there. He's not going to run away because he's afraid. And so I started running and he started following me. And so I kind of went from there, but I wasn't ready. I wasn't going to adopt him yet. Like, I prepared him, like once I worked with him for a month and a half, then I put his bio up and I realized when people started emailing us and they wanted to meet him, I thought I could either send him to go live with some elderly, older people that are not active and he'll be happy. He'll sit in people's lap the rest of his life and get petted. Or I'm going to show him the world. This dog only saw the inside of a house for 6.5 years. So he got, basically, I say he picked me. It was his decision. I just looked at him and I knew like he deserves so much more. So that's his story. And then I started training him to run, and it just training like I trained a person and like I trained myself and worked his way up. And then he started doing, you know, longer distances, 20 miles, and he did a marathon, and then he did 5 50Ks. But for the record, now he's getting older. He has shown me that he is slowing down, and me and his doctor talked because he has a heart murmur, which is nothing serious, but it's just something happens when a dog gets older. I mean, he's starting to slow down. So I'm keeping him no long runs of 20 miles anymore. We're keeping it at 15, 12 to 15. And he seems good with that. He I could tell he's still strong going up to 15, but he's gotten slower on the downhills. You know, it's just like a person, you know, your things start hurting, you know, and he takes supplements and all that. Right. Like, I know for me, I can't bomb the downhills like I used to, you know, it's just part of life. And so he's doing the same thing. And I figure, you know, one day he's not going to want to go at all that far. So I'll just cut it back even more. So he was going up to like 45, 50 miles a week. And now we're just keeping him around 30, 35, nothing longer than that. I don't think he needs to anymore. He's proven what he can do to the world, you know. And at 12 years old this year, he did his fastest 50K time by the way. So just it goes to show, it doesn't, you know, he got with age, he got better even. So, but just because I don't want any other issues to occur, you know, the doctor said, you know, give him supplements. We're giving him different supplements. He goes, because I'm like, am I damaging him? I don't want to be the one, like, for him cutting his life even shorter. You know, he could live to be 18 years old if he's in good shape. So he's like, yeah, you know, just, you know, let's cut him back a little bit and just monitor his heart. So we're good there. Yeah, but he's doing great. I mean, he's going to go out with us and do 12 miles after I'm done with you guys. So, that's awesome. And when that day comes and he can't run, I'm prepared to carry him. I got a really nice Nathan pack where I've had to carry him up mountain passes where he can't walk. You know, it's like ridiculously scrambling. And I have a pack where he fits in. So I thought, and when he's been injured a couple of times, he recently had a couple little tumors removed that were nothing. They're just like growths that dogs get. And when he had his teeth cleaned, since he was under, I asked if those can be removed. So he couldn't run because of the stitches in his arm. So I would put him in the pack and I'd take him out on a 12-mile run with him in the pack. And he's fine with that too. And then I have a stroller. So sure if I want to run on the road. Yeah. No, it's black. It's actually black in the pack. It's by Nathan. I know. I was going to make a
strange. That's
but there's nothing I can do.
This is the most shocking thing of the interview.
I
the
know.
The 100-mile races, the drug addiction, the dog that runs 100 miles. Yeah. You have a black.
I know. But all my other packs are colorful. They just happen to make that fast-packing pack. I guess they don't feel like colorful people want to go multi days out in the middle of the wilderness and be seen. So
for those of you
we'll have them fix it.
For those of you listening and wondering why, go go Google a picture of Catra, and you'll know what we're talking about. She is like rainbow bright.
Yeah, I gotta be. I mean, you never know. I go out in the wilderness by myself, and I want to be found. If there's like a needing to be a rescue, there's no doubt I'll be found, right?
Mm-hmm. Or you'll see a bear with like tie-dye.
That won't happen.
This is NASA here. We see Contra out there on the north side of California. 10 over.
Oh, I see mountain lions and bears and everything. Nothing. They're friendly. They just, we're in their territory. So you just got to mind your manners and know what you need to do to, you know, I see mama bears with their cubs, and you just got to go wide. You got to know to not have a confrontation with them. It's their wilderness. We're just the ones coming into their house.
Maybe you can train a bear next to run with you.
Yeah, that would be cool. I'll stick with the wiener dogs. They're easier to carry out if they have an injury, right? Like my friends are like, man, I've met people that had to leave their dogs to die up where I run on Mission Peak because they're out. You know, they can't carry their dog out if something happens. You know, what are you going to do with a Rottweiler? You know, can't carry him out. So I can carry him out.
So as you've been going along with your events, what do you look for your next events? Is it the length? Is it the elevation? Is it where in the world it is? What is the challenge that you're looking for next in these ultra runs?
All of those. No. So I'm doing what's called the Triple Crown this summer, which is the 3 100s in 3 months, or 3 200s in 3 months. Sorry. So Destination Races puts it on. Candace is the race director. So the first one will be in August, and that's Bigfoot 200, and that's in Washington. And then the next one in September is Tahoe 200 in Tahoe, California. And then the third and final one is Moab 240, and that's in Moab, Utah. So I've done all three of them. I didn't finish Bigfoot 200 last year. My boyfriend was having problems, so I stayed with him, and then we just ended up dropping because it was like, I don't really care. So now I'm doing all. I'm in one calendar year, so I'm signed up for what's called the Triple Crown. So I'm going to do all of them. But before then, I'm doing this new project. So John Muir walked from San Francisco to Yosemite 150 years ago. So I'm going to run in his footsteps. There's actually a book out called The Muir Ramble Route. And like 8 or 10 years ago, I got that book and I was like, I'm going to run this one day. And it just so happens I just finally had time. And I was like, wait, it's the 150th anniversary of the time he walked from San Francisco to Yosemite when he came, you know, to California. He wanted to see Yosemite. So I'm going to run it, and I have a crew, and it's 310 miles and I'm going to do it under 6 days.
That's awesome.
So yeah, it's on a lot of roads, but there is trails involved, and so it's pretty cool. It's going to be a pretty cool thing. And so there's been the couple that wrote the book walked the whole thing, and then one Stanford graduate student walked it, but nobody else has walked it. There's been some bikers that have biked it, but nobody's run it. So I'll get an FKT. I just have to finish. So might as well do it. Might as well be the first person to run it, right?
That's right.
So
yeah, Truman will crew for me, and he'll pace me a little bit too.
So, Catra, as we're up against it here, we love talking to you, and I love checking you out on Instagram and see what's going on. And I'm glad you have this book out. So, before we go, where can people check this book out? What can they expect in the book, and how do they get in touch with you?
So in the book, it's all about basically how I got into running. It's about my life, like how to overcome obstacles. It's not just for runners. Like, people that are non-runners are really enjoying it. Like, they're writing to me saying, you know what, this doesn't have to be for runners. I mean, even if you know somebody that has a substance abuse problem, you could relate to a lot of these stories, or somebody that, you know, has other issues in the past. You know, I dealt with anorexia, being molested, things like that. It's like people could relate across the board to this story. And just my love of dogs, other people are buying it that don't know anything about me that want to read this Truman story, you know. So, you know, it's all about Truman. So, yeah, they can get it on Amazon. They can actually contact me if they want to order a autographed copy. They can definitely go through me, and they can email me at dirtdiva333@gmail.com. Until I get a website up, I'm working on that right now, and then they'll be able to order it from there. But they can definitely email me, and then I can give them my information to where they can PayPal me and stuff, and then we can get them an autographed copy. And so I'm doing that a lot. So, but once I get the website up, it'll be much easier. It's like a lot of work right now. But if they just want to order it off of Amazon, they can do that. It should be in bookstores now. I haven't went into any of the bookstores yet, but I'm going to go check it out. It should already be in there. So, and I'm going to be doing a book tour. So mostly in California right now, but every race I'm at, I will be promoting my book. So all the 200s, I'll be in Washington and in Utah and be promoting it there for sure. And in Tahoe, and I'll be trying to do speaking engagements along the way as I travel up to these races too. So once I get, like I said, the website up, and it'll be on my Facebook, I'll post it on Facebook and Instagram and all of that as well.
That's awesome. I will definitely be ordering a book from you. My fiance has done a little ultra running in her day, and she was the one.
Oh, awesome.
She was the one who originally told me to try to get in touch with you a couple years ago. So
that's great.
Absolutely. So good luck with the book. Good luck with the 300 miles. Good luck with the 200 mile race.
Yeah. Good luck with everything. Yes, exactly.
Yes. But we appreciate you giving us some time here.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Anytime.
Always a pleasure.
All right. Good to have Catra back on. Good to have Catra back.
Yeah.
She's always a
good to check up with our formers.
She's very. I wonder how her. One thing I wanted to ask her, but we were up against the time. I wonder how your body holds up after doing that many miles all the time. Like, I wonder if she's breaking down at all, or if she feels better than ever.
I mean, judging from pictures, I mean, she's still. I mean, obviously, she looks pretty stacked and everything. So, I mean, I guess it's working. I mean, it's amazing. Almost every person I know has got a bad back or bad knees or something. Now, you figure, by rule, doing a couple hundred miles in a few days is going to bring that down. But
when are you signing up for your first 100 miler?
I'm still waiting for the first 10. What are you talking about?
The Georgia 100 miler.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm working my way up. I got to work to double digits first. I mean, give me some slack here. It's been busy down here,
but we're gonna bounce right into our second guest here. Funny that we have, like I said this somewhere along, but we had Catra Corbett, but now we have someone by the name of Carrie Kimmel coming on the show. So we got the CCs and the KKs. Only two Ks though. Only two Ks.
No. Yeah. We don't want to go that far.
It would really stink.
We're not that kind of podcast.
It would really stink
unless
if her middle name.
Them, we'll think about it.
It would stink if her middle name was like Kira or something like that. But we got a woman by the name of Carrie Kimmel coming on the show. She is a recording artist that she has her work in over 650 shows and movies. She's sung with the likes of Willie Nelson and the Backstreet Boys and Ringo Starr. Just a very talented musician. I like her because she's not only just a pop artist, but she's got her hands in both ends of the music industry, licensing, doing scores for movies and films. So we got put in touch with her, so I'm excited to talk to her. So without further ado, here is Carrie Kimmel. Oh, that, Carrie, that, Carrie, that's Mike. I'm Scott. Thanks for giving us a few minutes here on the show.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we were put in touch with you, and I got to do a little reading on some of your music. You seem to have had your music in a lot of different TV shows. You've done a lot of backup singing for numerous artists. Where did you get your start in music? Were you always a singer? Were you a guitar player? Were you a musician from a kid? Or was this something you found later in life?
Well, I was singing since before I could talk. So it was something that was always a part of me, definitely the singing part. And then my mom like forced me to take piano lessons, which I hated at the time, but I'm very thankful for now. And I started writing songs probably maybe around 13. I think that's when I wrote my first song.
And ooh, what was your first song about when you were 13?
Oh gosh, it was terrible. It was called No Room. It was horrible. Like I don't even somehow it had like sort of a hook, but the lyrics were so bad.
Was it about a boy? Was it about your angst as a 13-year-old?
I think it was more about that. I think it was more about like emotions and how to, like the whole teenage girls like feeling depressed and no one understands me.
Yeah. My fiance, I found, we were going through her, like moving her out of her old apartment, and I found a CD like entitled by her in like fifth or sixth grade called Fantasyland, and she snatched it out of my hand and like ran away, and I still have yet to hear it, and I'm dying.
Oh,
I'm dying to hear what's on that CD.
So it was her as like she was singing on it. It was her CD.
Yep, her own music, like her own.
That's awesome.
Her own song.
Oh my God. Yeah, I would pretty much say the same thing if my husband ever found my like old, writing of my old music. No way. I'd like bury it somewhere. I was singing and writing my whole life really, and my mom was always very musical, but she was not, her career was in the mortgage business.
Right.
And I just couldn't think of doing anything else. And, right around the time I was going to graduate high school, my mom knew of this woman who had worked at Arista, and her like graduation present to me was to go to LA.
Wow.
And I had never been and she had never been. And so we went to this thing called I think it was called the Radio and Records Convention, which they don't have anymore, I don't think. But I went to all the parties, and one night my mom wanted to go out with her friends, and so she said, well, you can either go to the party by yourself or you can come out with us. And so I decided I would go to the party by myself, and it was a little intimidating, but I tried my best to, meet people, and that was the night that I met the guy who gave my music a week later to someone else, who gave it to somebody else, who wound up calling me when I was back home babysitting and said that he wanted to play it for a bunch of labels, and he did, and I wound up signing a record deal with Atlantic from that.
Jeez.
So,
wow.
Good that I went to that party alone.
That's like that story, I was just at a party and handed my demo and boom, it's...
Yeah, it was very much like that. So that's kind of where it all started, I guess.
So when you're this young and it's just kind of on a whim thing, going out to L.A., somebody hand out your CD, boom, somebody wants to sign you. What's going through your head? Are you able to keep yourself level and just be like, all right, let's play it cool, this is a great opportunity? Are you, for lack of a better term, a 17-year-old that's just like screaming, oh, my God, I'm a star, I'm a star? Where do you go from here?
I mean, I think it was all those things. It was really exciting. My first record deal was when they still had like major, record budgets, and they would have limos pick me up and stay in the nicest hotels. And it was one of like, it was an extremely fun experience. And, it didn't have the, storybook fairy tale ending. I basically, after being signed for about a year and a half, I was still recording like demo after demo and getting with all these different producers, but I wasn't having an album come together at all. So I called him at the time and I asked him if he could either get me a release date or get a deal. And so he called the, you know, president of the company and he, you know, said, can you give her a release date? And they said, no, we can't right now. And so I asked out of my deal, which everyone thought I was crazy because it was so hard to get a record deal and I was basically leaving mine. But soon after that, I signed a publishing deal with Chrysalis. And then very soon after that, I signed another record deal with Virgin. And then, of course, that had an ending too. So I was signed by the president of the company who was also producing my album. And he wound up getting fired. And so I was kind of the last thing to get dropped after 2 weeks of the new guy coming in, the new president coming in. I was the last thing to get dropped. And it was really tough because, you know, I was, you know, trying to figure out, well, where do I go from here? And after about like 3 months of being depressed and saying I was going to quit music altogether, I realized that wasn't an option for me. And I decided that instead I was going to own everything I did and be completely in charge of my destiny and what was going to happen. And that's what I did.
Now, let's talk a little bit about your music. Did you start off going for mostly a pop sound? Were you a country-influenced artist? Were you more classically trained? What was your goal for music?
Well, I mean, I am very influenced by so many different types of music, and it's definitely come out in the different albums that I've put out. You know, my first album was a little pop country. My next album was more singer-songwriter. The one after that was like a little bit darker, grittier, like rock. And this album is more like pop electronica. So there's always been, my voice has always obviously been the same throughout each album, but my influences have changed. And so that's kind of, for me, what keeps it fun.
Right. Now you started to, I mean, we were sent the bio on you, and it's really impressive. It says over 650 films and TV shows, ranging from World War Z to Walking Dead, Pitch Perfect, WALL-E, The Office. Like, were you contacted to make music for those films or shows, or like, were you there to make a score, or was that just you made an album and they liked the songs that fit the program?
Well, I think every placement was a different story and a different scenario. I think the majority of the time, a music supervisor hears my song, whether it was that I pitched it to them or they heard it somehow, and then they've, wanted to license it. It happened to work for the project that they were working on. And so, like in the instance for The Walking Dead, I had finished that song. I basically recorded it a year prior to the trailer coming out. So I didn't write it for that trailer. I had no idea it was going to work for the trailer. And then I got the call that it was, you know, the perfect fit for the season three, I think it was three, trailer. And that was awesome. And then because I got that, and I really loved that song so much, I decided to create an album around it. So I didn't have the album until, you know, I didn't start creating the album until I got that placement, and it kind of fueled that because I just loved the response. I loved the song, and it was also cool to, like, hear that people were so into it. So...
So you start to get notoriety from, you know, songs like that with The Walking Dead. When are you always constantly making your own music, or are people like, hey, you would be perfect to make a song for Dreamgirls? Like, how does this work? Where you go from, how did you get involved in so many different shows? Because it's pretty cool to imagine that I could be flipping on the TV right now and like a bunch of your songs might come on multiple different channels.
Yeah, that's definitely been pretty cool. I mean, that's happened to me quite a bit when I've been just kind of like on, you know, have the TV on, and then I'll be flipping from one thing and I'll see like a promo I just did, and then like a movie I have a song in, and it's that's definitely like the most fun part of this job. But you know, everything has come about in so many different ways. So most of what I do is songs. The majority of it are songs that get placed that I've written just because I felt like writing it.
Right.
So that's probably most of the placements happen that way. The next kind of like set of placements happen because I'm called by a specific, you know, film company or a network or a music group, and they ask me to create something very specific for the show, like
right.
for any theme songs that I do. It's always, they gave me, you know, I created it specifically for the show.
Hmm.
So like with the Fosters, I was given the script for like the pilot and then kind of just the brief of what they were looking for, you know, genre wise and that kind of thing for the theme song. And I just felt like I really got a sense of what they were looking for. And so I wrote the song and I was happy and excited that I got it. You know, I wasn't the right. only person writing for it, though. I mean, there were many, many, many other people writing for it. So it's always like a crapshoot. I don't know if I'm going to get something, but I try to just, you know, try my best and see if I can understand what they want and put my own spin on it.
Now, is that like a thing that you start to get a reputation for? Like Carrie crushes it with show themes and whatnot. Like let's hire her again for this, and someone recommends you again for the next show. Is that become like yeah. almost like a genre?
I mean, gosh, I do so many different genres that I don't know that it goes by genre, but it definitely right. I think that I'm kind of at least somewhat known now for being able to write to a brief and being able to deliver something that hopefully they want, you know? So, you know, but it runs the gamut for sure. I mean, I remember there was like 1 week that I was working on a kid's show. I was doing a trailer for a thriller, another show. It was a thriller. I was trying to remember the name of the show. It was Fortitude, which was very dark and kind of like a scary type of a trailer. And I was working on like a couple pop songs, basically. And I was working on something that was a little bit more like rootsy, acoustic, swampy, you know. And I was like, it was just crazy that there were all these songs in 1 week that were so different from each other. And I was working on so many different projects at once, which was awesome. Yeah, it gets a little crazy.
Yeah. All right, let's try to get Mike back here.
Okay. Right,
give me 2 seconds. You'll hear me fade away for a second and then come right back.
Sure.
Don't worry, this will all be edited together.
Hey, any better?
Yes, much better. All right, let me merge you back in.
Yeah, all right.
Hey, Carrie, the good news is Mike is back.
All right.
The bad news is now he has to talk.
Oh, okay.
That is true.
I guess we'll let him talk.
But, so Mike, we were just talking about, like, you know, how she's been in so many television shows and film and whatnot. But now that you I guess being in that many shows and whatnot, you're able to, you know, at least, you know, support yourself monetarily, I would think. But I know you have which is awesome, because I'm guessing that's one of those things that is great because it's being played all the time while you're not doing something. So it's being played while you're working on new things. It's on the TV.
Right.
It's on the movie, which is great. But now I know you have a new album coming out tomorrow. Right? Tomorrow?
Yes.
Tomorrow. Called Gold and Glitter. Tell us a little bit about Gold and Glitter. What's the sound if people have never heard your music before? And the recording process and what it's all about here.
Well, that album came about really much like my album Black came about, where I had written a song and I just really loved it, and I decided to create an entire album around it. And so the first song that I wrote was Golden Glitter. and then I...
So typical.
I know, right? And it's very like pop electronica, uh-huh. So it definitely has a sound, you know, a cohesive sound throughout the album. But some of the tracks are more, you know, like female empowerment, and some of them are, one of the tracks that's probably one of my favorites is about depression, and it's pretty, you know, it's definitely more the emotional side of the album. Some of the songs are just more fun, but they all kind of tie together, you know, with this kind of like pop electronica element.
As you're promoting this, I noticed there's been like a lot of bands when they have something that goes on to a TV show or it's a jingle, they try to distance themselves from it when they have like a new album. Do you just embrace all that, or is it just one of those, this is way different than anything else, people, don't tell me about this other stuff?
You know, I just kind of take it as it comes. I don't have like a real strategy about it. I just love to create the music, and if it gets placed in something, that's even better, and that helps with people hearing the music, you know, hearing the album. So, you know, like, I didn't plan it this way, but the title track, Golden Glitter, the album was already coming out, and it was already set to release tomorrow, and then I found out, like, maybe a month or two before the movie Blockers came out, that Golden Glitter was going to be in the movie. And so it just kind of worked out perfectly, because I was like, oh, great, this is the album I'm releasing. And it just so happens that it's going to be in that film, you know? So sometimes it works out really well, and other times I can't really control what's going to get placed and when, you know, because I'm constantly putting music out.
Now, I got to ask you, you have done background music for some of the, background vocals and whatnot for some of the greatest artists who ever lived, just to name a few: Bruce Springsteen, Alicia Keys, Ringo Starr, Stevie Wonder, John Legend, Willie Nelson, the Backstreet Boys. Like, first off, how does this work? Like, are you hired to come to backup for them? And I got a million questions here, but how did this start?
Well, so that's a completely different side of like my career.
Okay.
It has absolutely nothing to do with writing or my own artistry. So I get called a lot to do especially live performances with bands,
right,
and with artists. And so, you know, I was in the Al Pacino film, where I sang background for him when he played an artist in the movie Danny Collins.
Mm-hmm.
And then I sang backgrounds for Bruce Springsteen at this like Music Cares event. And then probably the coolest thing ever and the most fun was I sang at there was the CBS Beatles tribute. It was their 50th anniversary from when they were on the Ed Sullivan Show. And so me and two other girls were the house band backup singers. So we sang with everybody that
That's
night.
Nuts.
So we sang with John Mayer and Pharrell, and yeah, it was incredible. And of course Ringo, and I sang with Ringo at the Grammys, and then I also did a really fun show with him. We sang backgrounds, well, for him, but then also a whole bunch of other people. It was I'm going to forget his name. The director, David Lynch. Yeah. So he was doing this event.
Yep.
And so, and it was Ringo's birthday. So he was playing that night. And so it was
that's amazing.
All these really fun. Yeah. And then I did this other live, performance that they air a lot on Access now, with, Willie Nelson and Kris Kristofferson and just like a whole crew of people. And it was, so I get called for a lot of those kinds of events, which is so much fun.
Now, is it hard, like, you know, like, you're very young, you know, you're not, and you're working with these artists that I'm sure maybe you've listened to growing up, or, you know, like, for instance, you work with the Backstreet Boys. Who's your favorite Backstreet Boys? Mine's Howie D.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I like him too.
No, but I mean, like, these artists that you're growing up, like, I'm looking at, like, okay, so I played in bands growing up all the time. I played bass for a long time. And I'm seeing that you perform with Dave Grohl. And he was like, he'd be one of the ultimate guys to ever, like, for me to sit down and interview. What was that like?
He was probably my favorite. Well, I've had like a mad crush on him forever. So.
Yes, me too.
Yeah, so, yeah, I think everybody, even my husband's like, yeah, I get that, totally. he was one of the nicest guys. We had to do a bunch of rehearsals with him, and, you know, and he was always just so nice and easy to work with. And I mean, one of the most talented guys ever.
Yep.
Ever. So, you know, and sometimes, you know, people surprise me, not their talent necessarily, but just, you know, like for instance, John Mayer, I sing backgrounds for him, and he's not really my type. Like, he's most girls' type, but he's not mine. And then I realized after we worked together how, like, incredibly talented and yep. charming he was, and I was like, okay, I get it. Cool, I get it now.
Yep.
But
that poor husband of hers is just like, you know, he wasn't even my type, but then I performed. I'm like, okay, I can dig it. Yeah.
Right. He's so, like, yeah, I mean,
Oh, go ahead. No.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, like, it's definitely a really cool part of my job that I really love doing. And it really has nothing to do with my songwriting. It's more just, you know, getting to sing with these incredible artists.
Yeah, I mean, I was on your webpage before, and I see I was just clicked on the news section of it. And there's this incredible picture of you on stage, but in the middle, you're with Willie Nelson. And
yeah.
I think you write underneath it. Was this when you were pregnant?
I was pregnant with my daughter. It was like almost 3 years ago now, probably about 3 years ago. And
did you have to stay away from Willie in case your daughter would get any like contact high?
yeah, it's definitely a concern. No,
no, but that really has to be amazing.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. It was one of those things that, you know, I was probably 4 or 5 months pregnant, so, you know, people could tell sort of. Unless I pointed it out, they probably wouldn't really nobody would have come up to me at that point and said, are you pregnant? Because there's a really good chance that I wasn't.
And that would be awkward.
So, yeah, that would not be good. But yeah, that performance, I was definitely pregnant and not feeling so good either, but powered through.
Mike, you there?
Uh-oh, did we lose him?
We might have lost
him.
Oh, there he is.
Oh, there you are.
Yeah, there we are. With all your music that you do, and you also made your own licensing company, Glow Music Group. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, I was licensing so much of my own music, and, you know, I'd already had these amazing relationships with different networks and film companies and music supervisors, and I would have a lot of bands come to me and ask me who placed my music, and I would say, well, I placed most of it, and so, you know, they would ask if I would take them on. And at first, that was not something that I really wanted to do because, you know, I'm an artist and repping other bands just seemed like I didn't know if that was really the route I wanted to take. But at the same time, I had music supervisors asking me for things I didn't have, like hip hop or boy band or, you know, things that I obviously would not do myself. And so it made sense to start pairing the two and to take on these bands and pitch them. And so then I started getting placements for these other bands, and that's just grown into now over 200 bands that I rep, everything from, you know, EDM to indie rock, hip hop, all of it.
I mean, you seem like you're very smart because it seems like you have covered your bases as far as, you know, being able to make income with music, which probably allows you, you know, a little bit of freedom to not panic about getting on the road and making money or where the next paycheck's coming from, and focus on your music. So it definitely sounds like you've got your hands in a lot of different things. And I think that especially as an artist in you know, 2018, it's very important to not wait for that one single that's going to make you popular, but to diversify yourself, like whether it is just like, you know, I think of comics because I do comedy, but they do so many different things now than just go on stage at the late night club. You know, it's the YouTube and whatever they can get their hands on. So I think it's very smart of you to be involved in so many different things.
Yeah, I mean, it's sometimes it's a little too much, but, you know, trying to juggle it all, it gets a little crazy. But I do really love, like, every aspect of it. I mean, creating is my favorite, of course. And so I think the balance comes in where I need to still make sure that I'm leaving time to create and I'm not just spending all my time pitching and working, you know, the band side of things. I mean, you know, I have assistants and they help me with that side of things. So it's really, you know, it leaves me time to be able to do what I want to do as well.
Yeah. So Carrie, it seems like you got a lot going on. I wish you the best success of Golden Glitter. If people want to go get it, or if is there like one song they should check out first, and where can they go to contact you?
Well, it's available for pre-sale, and it'll be available, like, for real tomorrow on iTunes. I believe it's on Amazon Music as well, but definitely iTunes, and you can preview all the tracks. So,
nice.
I mean, I have a few favorites, probably, Voices, Ignite, Color, Golden Glitter. Those are probably my four top favorites of the album. And as far as contacting me, on my website, I have a contact page, and a lot of those emails go straight to me. So it's at the email address is info@carriekimmel.com, but you can also go to the website, carriekimmel.com, and click on the contact page, and it's there too.
One last question for you, Carrie. With you, your music being on so many different shows and movies, have you ever sat down and watched something and halfway through started listening to something and be like, oh yeah, I did that. Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
Yes, a few times. Yeah, definitely. And sometimes my mom will call me and she'll tell me that she heard my song. I'm like, wait, what was it on? I didn't know I had a song in that.
Does it take you out of the moment? Like it's a big, intense scene and all of a sudden you're like, God damn it, there I am again.
Yeah. Definitely, that has happened.
Carrie, thank you so much for coming on the show for a few minutes, and we wish you the best with the new album, and we hope to talk to you in the future.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
The one and only Carrie Kimmel.
Hmm.
Yeah, I want like our podcast playing in the background of 650 shows.
Yeah, like I want to be watching Solo and be like, yeah, whoa. What's he listening? Oh, that's me.
I know you hate this show, Chewie. I know, me too.
Chewie, calm down, calm down.
Falcon crashes. I know, they're terrible. They say a lot. I get it, Chewie. But yeah, so Kantra Corbett and Carrie Kimmel. That's quite a pair right there. That is a WWF tag team.
Yeah, it's the tongue twister of guest podcasts, I guess.
Yeah, what is that called when it's a double consonant? There's a name for that. I can't remember. But anyway, Carrie was pretty awesome. So go check out her album, Golden Glitter. We'll be right back.
This is Verbal Shenanigans, bad for business. Tweets, advertising, and things said that shouldn't have been. On March 16, 2015, an eager Micah Berlew jumped onto Twitter to try to get guests on the podcast, reaching out to Capadonna, a known member of Wu-Tang. In an attempt to get him on the show, Michael Berlew tweeted, "Hey Cap, big supporter of the Klan."
See, big supporter of the Klan.
And that is Verbal Shenanigans, bad for business.
All right, Carrie Kimmel. I want to like go back. Now I want to like go back to the Walking Dead and figure out what song was hers. And I want to. There was a couple other things in there. I'm like, oh, I want to hear what her song was put to.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be interesting to kind of figure it out. No, I mean, it's almost I'm sure if you, I go through IMDb or something like that, it must be a... I mean, it's kind of like I said, I almost wonder if, like, she almost forgets them. Like, even, like, somebody says, you did that. Nah.
Yeah.
Nah, it can't be me.
I mean,
nah,
if you
give me some of the lyrics. Yeah, it sounds familiar.
If you're at 750 shows, and you definitely no idea, like, that you're in certain things, because you can't even keep track. Like, think about, like, this podcast. We've done 202 episodes as of today. I forget about things we've done before. I got to look back and be like, oh, yeah, that was fun. You know, like, even, like, the other day when you were giving me that quiz about the show, there was a couple of names. I'm like, oh, yeah. Like it kind of jarred my memory that what we've done. So,
yeah. It's been a hell of a ride.
But unfortunately, our old episodes aren't bringing us money every time they're played. So,
I mean, you should just go over Don Becknonda's house and just be like, fork it over.
Yeah, give me money, yo.
Just give me another $10, man. You're making movies, your girl's making music. There's got to be some money in there for, you know, your podcast.
Yeah, screw. Well, while we're at, I'll give them a quick plug because, so as we know, I am getting married next year, next April, and the wedding band is going to be Kim Boyko's band, who was a guest on this show. So, they're going to be...
Is the wedding song going to be the I'm Looking at You one?
Yeah. It's going to be actually you're doing a duet with her.
Oh, beautiful. I mean, I'm going to have to do some open mics to get the voice ready, but, you know, I'll be ready for you, man.
That's all right.
Your special day.
You and the girlfriend could get some mics together, and she could do her songs, and you get up like, guys, I'm just working on a new tune. I'm looking at you.
I forgot the lyrics. I'm just going to do the bus joke I used to do that you all love.
Hey, Scott's family. Alex's family, glad to be here. You guys hate buses this time of year. No one has any clue what we're talking about.
I really didn't like it when you ragged on her freestyle for 2 hours, man. She does not look bad in that dress, bro. She did not appreciate that.
Yes. But, so yeah, a lot going on, I guess.
Big life stuff, I guess, for us. You're getting married. I'm getting a house.
You are.
It's almost like we're a couple of adults or something.
Well, we know that's not true, but so you are purchasing your first home in Georgia.
That is correct. We've been looking for about a month or so, and we found something we really love. House looks immaculate. It's a dream come true. It's got a nice backyard with stuff set up like a stone fire pit and a finished basement. I mean, it's going to take a knocking out of the savings, and it'll take a while to put a bunch of stuff in there. But
but
I think down the road
okay.
It's going to be the place to buy. So
yeah,
it's a great. It's very exciting. Very exciting.
Pictures look nice. You got a nice big deck. You got I was laughing the one room with the I think it was the basement. It was the pictures. There was like 5 recliners in there.
I was basement.
I was like, this family loves reclining.
We don't take kindly to those regular chairs in our basement. When we go to watch TV, we're on our backs.
You know that the Nelson family does not sit on the same piece of furniture. We all need separate accommodations.
I need something where eventually I'll be staring at the ceiling. You got me?
You know that Grandpa Nelson worked in a mine just to fund the Lazy Boy Company, and we keep that tradition alive in the Nelson family.
That's right. We don't take kindly to those people who want a futon. Hell no.
You
recline in this house.
You know, back when your great-great-great-great-grandpa had his slaves and he had a hard day of beating his slaves and being rude to them, he needed to rest. And what did he rest in? A lazy boy.
Yeah, that's right. Now, back in those days, it was two slaves that were tilting him in a wooden chair, but that's still the principle of what this family was built on.
The Nelsons love tradition. They don't just like tradition. Yeah. We love tradition.
We don't play.
And you know what? What's better than blatant racism and coming up with owning a man than putting your feet up at the end of the day?
Why do you think we named our son Landon Zachary Boy? Huh? Lazy Boy. Keep it in the family, yo.
So Landon Zachary Boy Nelson?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We put in a fourth name. We did not want to toy with tradition.
And you know those...
What would our forefathers think if we named him something like Cement, huh?
And you know those...
They would take kindly to that.
Those greedy slaves, they saw, oh, master, you got an extra recliner. Can I sit in it? No, you can't. No, you cannot sit in that recliner, boy.
Bringing slavery back to the podcast world. It's a beautiful thing.
Well,
And then I get to live in the house that was built on it. I got the plantation. It all comes to fruition.
You heard it here.
Full circle, Scotty.
Mike Berlew has a plantation.
Damn right. And right.
He's going to hang
you
up
will
his...
pick cotton and quote the Dukes of Hazzard for me.
Wow. Wow. I was going to say, you put that picture up with the Confederate flag.
We don't just have the flag. We have our cars with a flag on it. I told you, tradition.
So what kind of household homeownership things are you going to have to do that you've never done before?
I mean, pretty much everything, but I mean, like the whole
I
process.
Mean, take
like,
care of it.
Well, not that, but it's even like, yeah, I like it. I have to ask you, how do I like get it? Is this a thing, or do I just go on eBay and bid, or it's?
But, I gotta go to the bathroom in the bathroom.
I mean, the house is pretty stacked. I mean, the good thing is I'm getting most of the appliances in the kitchen, so we don't have to worry about that.
More importantly, that's the second time you use stacked on one podcast.
Oh, well, you know, I mean, that's a secret word. It's like Pee Wee's Playhouse. You're supposed to yell, ah, and... You know,
if you heard the phrase that pays, call 732-881. Caller, you're listening to Verbal Shenanigans. Can you tell us the secret word of the day?
Is it floppier?
Oh, no, sorry. Let's go to the next caller. Jim.
You said it 10 times. Are you sure?
Jim from Middlesex. Jim? Jim?
Is it Dukes?
No. Let's go to Bob from Lyndhurst. Bob?
Scott, I think I know the phrase that pays, and I'll let you say the odds are not stacked against me.
You won two tickets to Lenny Dykstra's court hearing.
Oh, man, thank God and all. I got a notice in the mail. I thought I was going to be one of the jurors on that thing. That's going to be way better.
Well. So you're going to have to mow the lawn, right?
I've mowed lawns before. I mean, yeah, I mean, if stuff I haven't done, I mean, there'll be some power washing I'm going to have to do. My brother has equipment like that.
You're going to have to power wash your brother?
No, the house.
Oh. I mean, you could power wash him too.
He can stink up a place and all, I'll tell you that. So it could happen. It could happen.
In Georgia, we power wash our siblings.
Yeah, we don't use no fancy showers. We use a power washer.
We blast that BO right off.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I'm going to power wash you head and shoulders, okay? And then when you're clean, then you can sit in one of my 12 recliners. Only then.
Well, in honor of you buying a house, I looked up some interesting things that people have asked the sellers for. So you're going through the process. You're going to buy a house. There's like certain concessions people make, home inspections, things that go on. So here's a couple of stories. Okay, so the first family, which I feel like this might be you guys. A buyer asked me to include the seller's dog, a poodle, as part of the contract. He was serious.
Interesting.
It was more of an entitlement issue with this buyer. I can get anything I want because I'm wealthy, offering cash and a good price, than that he was a dog person. Of course, the sellers loved this dog and would never give it up. The home was eventually sold to a family who had their own dogs. I stopped working with this client and referred them to a local dog shelter.
It sounds like something like Ted DiBiase would do that. Like, I got enough money to buy your dog. No, you don't have that enough money. Oh, really? And then you just see him like petting the dog, 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 dog.
Oh my God! If there wasn't a better time for Mike's sound to freeze. That was not him just having like a moment and saying dog, 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 dog over again, which we all, if you've listened to the show, can probably picture him doing. You can definitely picture him like tweaking out and saying dog a bunch of times. But he has some connection issues sometimes, so hopefully that'll straighten out. But let's see if we can get him back on the line.
And we're back.
That could not have been a better moment for you to freeze, because it just sounded like you went like this. Obviously not conditioned to have a dog, 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 and it just sounded like you got hung up on dogs, which
that would
very believable. Like for a sec, it took me longer than it normally does when you have your weird freakouts with the internet over there, because I thought you were just having a moment.
Yeah, I couldn't get past the moment. I'm sorry.
All right. The next one says, after several hours of inspection, discussion, and a long, drawn-out decision-making, doors are locked, everyone leaving. The buyer says, I want you to unlock the house and let me back in, then turn on the hose and make it rain on the house so I could hear what it sounds like. I said, no. Please note, I'm actually very accommodating, but declined for good reasons. Thankfully, we sold the house. Now, was that something you asked?
No, I didn't. You know, I mean, you know, I told him, you know, sometimes birds take a dump on the house, so, you know, we had to arrange that. That was awkward.
So get on the roof and let loose.
I want to see what Big Bird does up there.
Yeah, so they turned on they wanted the hose to be sprayed on the roof. So next, this story always makes me smile. The client was a helicopter pilot in the U.S. Army. We were exploring the basement of one house when he pointed at the wall and said, I will buy this house if they give me that. By that, he meant a framed poster of NSYNC. He was apparently a huge fan of the boy band. We had four more showings, but he demanded we pull into a restaurant and write the offer immediately that included the poster. Unfortunately, he didn't win the bid on the house, so he had me reach out to the agent and ask if he could buy the poster from the owners. They said no. It took him a week before he could look at any other house. He was so heartbroken.
Obviously, this man doesn't have priorities in life. Honey, I am 8 months pregnant. Shut up! That poster was amazing!
It must have been a good NSYNC poster, though. It must have been different than the other ones.
It would have been great if it was like one of those you got from like Hot Topic or something for like $5 and they sold it for $100.
Yeah.
That would have been like so epic.
Next was, When a buyer came to an open house, I served chocolate chip cookies from the decadently famous Levain Bakery. 8 cookies for $49. When we started negotiations, he said he'd take the deal only if I threw in the box of cookies. I thought he was joking and said sure, but when I got the deal sheet the next day, he'd written in a box of cookies that were offered at the open house. Later on, during our final walkthrough, he said, "You better not forget my cookies." I brought 8 to the closing, which he ate right then and there, and got mad I didn't bring milk.
You could ask for a recipe. I don't know.
This next person had a client looking for a high-end apartment, about $7,000 a month, who was heavily into Kabbalism and numerology. So he said I couldn't show him buildings with specific addresses if the numbers were bad, and can only show apartments that were on specific floors and had specific numbers.
So, like prime numbers or something like that?
I don't know. Maybe odd numbers, even numbers. I don't know. When showing a home with a pack of 13 alpacas on the property, my client became attached to a baby alpaca and therefore wanted to buy that one and all of her friends so it wouldn't feel lonely for an additional $120,000. The seller agreed. Deal? You sure this isn't Izzy?
I mean, I love a good animal here and there, but I mean, $120K, my house is almost that much.
This sounds like your girlfriend. I want to buy the alpaca, but I got to buy the rest so I won't be alone.
Yeah. Babe, you really don't know how to take care of these things. I just want them.
Did I tell you the
week
donkey
later,
story?
We're selling alpaca meat by the pound, trying to make up that
$1,200. $1,200 alpaca meat. Get it now. Did I tell you the donkey story last week? I can't remember.
Yeah, go ahead for it. If we did it before, we'll cut it out.
Yeah, so I'm driving to work, and I drive back roads to work. Believe it or not, guys, this podcast is not the only job I do. So I'm driving to work, and the back roads are kind of nice. It's like kind of through a town called Booton, and there's like a lot of woods and farms and stuff. And, you know, I'm like listening to my music, having a good day, like a good start to the day. And there's always like there's this corner where there's like 4 little farms. And I always look at the animals. There's alpacas sometimes. There's like horses and cows. And I'm like, oh, a donkey. And I look at this donkey. I'm like, that's pretty cool. I haven't seen a donkey. And I look slightly to the right. And there behind the donkey is this other donkey coming up full force with a full erection and just mounts the donkey right in front of me the minute I look at it and just goes to town like, and I'm sitting there like, first I start giggling like a little kid, and I'm like, why? This is one of those moments that I wish someone was with me. Like, I wish someone, and I look in the rearview mirror, and there's a guy in another pickup truck behind me just giggling to himself, too. I was laughing, so I was laughing for the next, like, 5 minutes after that, because it was, like, it was gross. It was, like, National Geographic, yeah. Like, put it this way, the donkey, the male donkey was definitely ready to go. And and I felt very insecure about my own personal stuff.
Yeah, I mean, nobody can be donkey proud. I mean, sorry. I mean,
maybe Rastafarian guys.
I mean, I guess whenever you're having a bad day, and I'll just give some donkey some Viagra, and you'll be smiling within a couple minutes or so, or. Well, at least make sure there's a female donkey around, or else you won't be smiling when it comes charging.
Dude, it was hilarious. Let's all live together. I represented a seller of a 2-bedroom apartment that got an offer the first day on the market. Only my seller couldn't move immediately because their new residence was not ready. In order to not lose the deal, the seller agreed to let the buyer, which included a husband, wife, child, and 2 dogs, move in for a month. They all piled into the seller's apartment and all became great friends.
Okay.
That's not what you guys are doing?
No. I mean,
like, you two can get those recliners.
Inspection, like the father or the owner came in, and he's like, I just want to make sure when you guys are leaving. And he just went back and he sat in the car for like 10 minutes as we were looking around the house. So
we looked at a house like a couple weeks ago, and because we've just been looking like what's out there, like open house, and a guy was sleeping in the bedroom. Yeah, a kid was sleeping. They're like, oh yeah, there's a kid sleeping in there. And we went in, walked around. The kid was just knocked out, like just sleeping, like maybe a 19-year-old kid.
That's a little too creepy and yep. all. I mean, I don't want to be in the room when that kid wakes up and have to pay for all his psychiatrist bills. You know,
needless to say, we weren't interested in the house.
No, it's fine. Let's go in. Look at the size of these closets right here. Aren't these beautiful? please, check. This bed comes with it. Sit in the bed next to Timmy. Go on. No, it's fine. A nice Chinese couple was here earlier. He enjoyed waking up to them. It's cool. Go on. You're there.
Last one. I was the broker for a luxury apartment where the buyer insisted, in order for the deal to go through, that the sellers include all the furniture, beds, blankets, dishes, essentially the entire contents of the apartment, including the toilet paper and bath soap. The sellers,
bath salts, yeah, I'll bid on that. Wait a minute.
The sellers agreed for the right price. So,
I mean, if it's enough to where it's just a formality exactly. to get other stuff, yeah, why not? I mean, absolutely. As long as I can get better stuff for the stuff I'm giving you, yeah, I'll give you anything.
Absolutely. So that hopefully your experience was a little smoother than that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'll still look out for selling Berlew's alpaca meat down here in Georgia.
Alpaca meat and snake milk?
Yeah. I got a full store down here, man. I mean, I didn't mess around when I moved out of state. I'm like, I'm gonna build my next generation right here. And, you know, hopefully one day I can get stores throughout the world selling alpaca meat and snake milk.
I feel like in Georgia you have a chance.
Well, just my neighbor's Alabama, and up north is Tennessee. I mean, right there, prime real estate.
Mm-hmm. Berlew snake milk.
You think that snake milk is delicious, man? You put that on some beautiful alpaca meat. Boy, you got yourself a Memorial Day to remember.
So before we go, did you watch the royal wedding?
We were technically up because we were going to yard sales that morning. But I mean, Izzy got up at 4 a.m. for all the pre-festivities. I absolutely refused to get up until I had to.
Right. I watched it. Not like I didn't like set a timer to get up, but I got up and it was on and I put it on. I found it kind of interesting, believe it or not.
In what way?
I thought that, I don't know, I kind of like the pageantry of it, like the over-the-topness of it in a way. And I thought it was kind of cool. I thought it was kind of cool that... this Meghan, like, I didn't really know a lot about it. I don't know much about the royal family or anything like that. But I thought it was cool that this Meghan Markle is half African-American, half black. And I thought it was kind of cool that that's entering the royal family, which I think is pretty neat. There were some really good musical performances, which kind of got me. There was a really good choir who did a good version of... was it Lean On Me?
I think it was Lean On Me. Yeah.
A really cool version of that. And then there was a really cool cellist, like a 19-year-old kid. I don't know. I found it kind of interesting. I found it kind of interesting who was there. Like, We think, oh, David Beckham's there. The guy from Mumford & Sons is there. Elton John's there. I'm like, how the hell did George Clooney get there? You know? Listen, I found it kind of interesting. I like the video production of it, too, like where they had camera. Because, I've worked in that before, and I always find the production of it. And I thought when they were riding through the town was kind of cool because I've been I did a semester in London. And we went to that castle, so it was kind of cool to picture being there in that town. So we went to that town, and listen, like I find it one of the reasons I bring this up. I find it hilarious how people have to state, like on social media, how much they don't care about something that brings that other people might be interested in, like. Listen, if you are not interested in it, that's great. If you were not interested in it, you truly wouldn't have posted something about how uninterested you are in it. I hate this generation where we are. Like, there's certain people who have to pretend that anybody gives a shit what they think about something. Like, I don't care what you think at all. Like, if it's something that brings people joy, if it's opening day of football, like, I can't wait for the football season, so pumped, and you're not into football, and you're like, oh, I hate the NFL, man, the NFL's so stupid.
There's always, like, two or three people, I can give a shit football starts tonight.
Or like,
well, thank you for sharing.
Yeah, or, like, the Grammy. I hate, like, the Grammys. Listen, I haven't watched the Grammys. I probably watched one Grammys in my life, and I don't care, but if that's your thing, why is everyone so quick to just crap on somebody's, like, you know, joy? Like, I like the saying that they like to shit in somebody's ice cream. You know, like, I got ice cream, this is happy, and then no, I'm gonna make it about me somehow. You know, like,
it's the easy joke, if you will. It's the people who are probably sitting back saying, I want to say something funny, and the only thing they can think of is just the unoriginal, I can give a crap about this and that. You know, I mean, there's hundreds of thousands of things out there, and, you know, if your only thought is when you hear about something to say, I don't like it, then, you know, whatever. No, I mean, I mean, I'll be honest, I kind of look back and I'm like, I can't remember the last time I put something up on social media or something like that, just a regular comment or whatever. I mean, I got enough stuff in my life, I don't really care, and all. I mean, somebody puts up a funny joke, I'll laugh and whatever, but I mean, don't crap on people just because they think it's kind of nice to see when's the next time we're going to see something like that, a royal wedding, pretty much the kids, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was kind of interested in, because I don't know a lot about it, and it was like, you know, full access into something that you never really get to see, you know, like, you don't get to see the inside ceremonies and that kind of stuff too. So I thought it was kind of interesting. I don't know. And I did not think it was interesting until the morning of, and I woke up and it was like, I looked at my phone and it was like royal wedding stream, and I put it on and I find myself watching it. And I thought it was pretty neat, to be honest. Yeah. So I don't know.
They're a cute couple. I mean, I really hope it lasts and all. Like, I was in work and somebody's like, I don't think it'll last. I mean, because they heard this interview and that. And I'm like,
God.
Well, I'll be honest, if any of us had to be interviewed for like 6 months and everywhere we go, we get camera shots and whatever going into our marriage, not one of us would be looked at as that's the couple. Not one of us.
And I also found it interesting, like, she's a divorcee. She's does she have children? I don't think she has children. Maybe she has children. I don't know. Either way.
I thought she did. My parents said they didn't think so. I never looked it up, to be honest. I know, like, the mother came from an abusive relationship. Yep. And then, I mean, that's pretty much something when you're in an abusive relationship and the one thing you care about is protecting your daughter.
And she becomes...
After you do it, she becomes a goddamn duchess.
I mean,
that's the stuff where Disney makes a movie and you're like, come on.
See, that's why I kind of liked it, because it was just kind of cool, man. I don't know. People hate on everything so much. It's kind of ridiculous, but yes.
I'll be honest. My number one question was, what does the royal family do anyway?
Exactly.
I mean, brutal, honestly.
Well, exactly.
I mean,
there's a figure.
I literally don't know. I know they have influence, but at the end of the day, I'm still like, do they have any power, or is it just like, I'm the queen? Oh, okay.
Well, yeah, it's more of like a figurehead kind of thing from back in the day. But it's interesting to, like, think, like, of how much you read, right? And then, like, when your history books, now this is in the bloodline. Like, this will be, you know, as part of that genealogy. So, I don't know. I found it interesting, and yes, I'm man enough to admit that I did find the royal wedding kind of interesting. So,
yeah, good.
Yes, yes. Brother, let's get out of here. Anything to promote?
Since we were coming off National Rescue Dog Day, I will promote the place where I got my dog Callie, Home for Good Dog Rescue. They're based out of New Jersey. They have adopted over 5,700 dogs, rescued and counting. They rescue them from these high kill shelters in the South, and they bring them up to New Jersey, and they're looking for good homes. And I don't regret getting my dog for 1 second. And if you love animals, you should try to rescue a dog. So go to homeforgooddogs.org.
Yes, and if you could rescue my animal from jumping down the stairs and giving me a heart attack, that would be good too. So
Obi will be up for adoption once Scott hears $1,200 ACL.
$1,200 would be a blessing for that kind of thing. But anyway, I want to promote a friend I went to school with a long time ago in college. I was talking to him. I was asking him if he wanted to be a sponsor on the show because I really like his work, and it has nothing to do with that. But he started a woodworking company, and he makes some really beautiful woodwork. It does all sorts of shelves and tables and chairs and just really rustic-looking things, and it's called Black Bear Woodwork. Black Bear Woodwork. So check them out on Facebook, at Black Bear Woodwork, and just go check out some of his stuff. It's absolutely beautiful. If you're furnishing a new home, Mike, and you want maybe custom furniture made and whatnot, you got to go check this Get My Friend Mike out. It is absolutely beautiful stuff. Go check out Black Bear Woodwork. So with that, guys, I'll promote us real quick. Hey, we've had a lot of great episodes. This year has been amazingly awesome, as was last year. I mean, at the end of last year, we looked back and said, I don't know if we're going to be able to repeat this with some of the guests, and the guests have been phenomenal, and I feel like the shows have been really good lately, including this one. So go check us out on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Laughable, all that fun stuff, and give us a comment. It helps us populate in the system. And go check out the BS Podcast Network, which we are also on. So with that, life is funny. Laugh at it, and keep the wind at your back.
Sounds like a plan.